Accession number 33250, reel 9.
Excuse me. So John Wilton, reel 9. What happened to you next after you pulled out the line?
Well, I was fortunate in two ways. As I say, my time in this unpleasant situation was relatively short, and also I had missed the very fierce fighting which had got them there. The Irish Fusiliers in particular had a very bloody battle in a place on a hill, mountainside, called Spadoro. And I was very lucky to have missed that. Spadoro in the Gothic line was rather like Casino in the Gustav line. It was the hinge on which on which our advance would be stopped by the Germans, and there was there was one particular place called Tamagnin, which was a farm just visible in front of our position. It was under good observation by the Germans all around, and it was under observation from us if we were careful how we poked our nose over the top of the ridge. It was generally felt, certainly it was felt by the colonels of the Royal Irish Rifles and the London Irish Rifles, that something ought to be done about this place. It was a couple of farmhouses where the Germans had embedded themselves. They were nicely fortified. They had, amongst other things, they got great bales of straw around the buildings, which absorbed a certain amount of small arms fire and so forth. But the general was that we would be far more comfortable if this advanced German position were not there, or at least not occupied by them. Plan was made to attack this, and the only way of doing it was at night. They reconnoitred the position first and decided that it would be possible to attack it. And a company assault was mounted one night, and they took incendiary grenades with them and chucked them into the straw, the bales which were around the place, and set one of the buildings alight. But of course, we found then that they'd got a tunnel between the two buildings, and they were in the other one, there was a fairly nasty battle in which the commanding officer was wounded, badly cut about the legs by a mortar bomb, which fell rather close to where he was. That was Colonel Horsfall. He was carted off to hospital, Colonel Breeden, who took over from him, Colonel Breeden, who was, I think, commanding the London Irish at that point, decided he would have another go. Colonel Horsfall was in hospital sitting with his maps, working out what he was going to do when he got back and how he would deal with this problem, and received the unwelcome news that in his absence Colonel Breen had gone and done it. So, you know, that was the kind of healthy rivalry which existed in the brigade. They did mount a successful attack on Tamangin, and but it made life a bit easier for the remaining time that we were up there. But not all that much easier. Incidentally, while Colonel Horsfall was in hospital, a chap called Murphy Palmer took over command, and Murphy Palmer remained in command of the Irish Fusiliers for the rest of the campaign, right up to and after the end of the war, and Colonel Horsfall went and commanded the I think went initially to command the London Irish, and so it's very difficult to remember all these things. One had other things to think of at the time and since, that was in November. In February, at the beginning of February, the 4th of February, the brigade was withdrawn and went back to Florence for another sort of rest and refit, bit of leave in Florence and so forth. And after a few days, we were moved to Forli, which was down on the plain, on the extension of the Po Valley plain. In other words, we were out of the mountains and down on the level, and there we were to train and get ready for the eventual campaign up to the River Po. But of course, between us and the River Po was the River Senio, the River Senio, like all rivers and canals in that part of the of Italy, have very high raised banks on either side. The bed of the river over the years has risen above the level of the surrounding countryside, and it runs in a sort of conduit, as it were, between high, steep banks, and that again the Germans had selected as a suitable defensive line, and they which indeed it was, because you could attack it, but if you got onto the near bank, of course the Germans were waiting for you on the other bank. And this position had been established before we got back to Forli, that too had lasted through the winter, and people were having to take it in turns to go and man the banks of the River Senio. It was a terrible place because the Germans had in some places managed to get onto what you might call our bank, as well as their own. They had the river wound about a bit like that, so that there were always places where, owing to the turn of the river, you could see into the back of the other positions. Worked mainly, of course, to the German advantage, but not exclusively. There were places where we had the advantage and were able, in particular, to shoot with field artillery into the sort of back of their positions. But it was once again rather like harking back to the First World trench warfare. You were sometimes as little as 10 yards or so away from a German who was dug in on the other side of the bank that you were dug in on, and people would dig tunnels through so that they could see what was going on, it was a place where you couldn't do very much with a tank. The tank couldn't climb up the thing. You had tanks back, so that if the Germans tried to counterattack and return, they could stand off and fight them. But you couldn't get a tank up there to do anything for you. Their role was largely defensive. So that it developed into a close contest between two sets of infantry, with very little possibility. You couldn't bring down a great barrage on something because you would get as much of it as the Germans. So it was a case of patrolling, hardly patrolling. You couldn't move that far, but skirmishing, chucking grenades about, using the 2-inch mortar and the Piat, the anti-tank projectile launcher, used as a mortar. You shot the bomb up into the air and it came down, and its armour piercing explosion, if you were lucky enough to land it on somebody's dugout, would inflict considerable damage. But this was very fine calculation, and there was talk of a chap who drove a couple of stakes into the ground and used his braces to catapult a grenade a few yards further than he could have thrown it, and so on. The 2-inch mortar came into its own because that could be got up and with a reduced charge could lob bombs into a position of a matter of yards away. I mean, you had to be good at it, and you had to be careful with it. There was one terrible occasion when the mortar dug itself in, and the bomb that was to have gone up went into the bank in front of the position, as the manual used to say, to the detriment of the firer. But that was it. You couldn't move by day because you were always under observation. Your company headquarters would be at the edge of the flat approach to the berm, and it was impossible to move by day. We evolved a technique of turning night into day, and any time when the moonlight was not sufficient to enable you to move about at night, they played batteries of searchlights onto any clouds that were available and lit up the night, so that we could get the necessary movement for getting up rations, ammunition, patrolling, doing anything, visiting your chaps in their positions. You could only do it at night, and so that was the way one lived. It was very short stints. You were only in there for a few days at a time, then you were taken out and replaced. This continual turnover, you did a few days there, then you came back, then somebody else did up, and so it went. And the battalions themselves, you had always one battalion in the brigade was out of this thing. We had the 56 Recce Regiment, which was commanded by an Irishman and was reckoned to be a part of the Irish Brigade for certain purposes, so that we had four battalions. We had three deployed actually along the line of the river, the Senio Bank, and one in reserve and rest, and they were turned over to continually. Honed, as they say, the fighting qualities of the infantry again in a form of warfare with which they had become relatively unfamiliar. You didn't get a very much close quarter contact of that sort, but the fighting on the Senio, on the whole, I think we can claim that we had the better of it. Although the Germans held their positions, in the day-to-day activity, we reckoned that we outdid them. And when we came off the Senio, we were feeling that we were, we'd done pretty well there. We were taken back to a town called Forli, which is on the road which will lead you eventually up to Pescara and the Po, Ferrara and so on. Now, but well back, and the intention was that we would be there, we would refit, and we would train, and we would get ready for the next stage of the campaign, which is going to be the advance on the Po. Forli wasn't a bad little town, had its own opera house. I went to see Rigoletto there, very well done, but so many Italian towns have their own little opera house, and touring companies come, and so on. It was that was agreeable. There were shops even. But the barracks into which we were moved were really, frankly, disgusting. I think, possibly deliberately so, the Italian troops that had been there had been, I don't know whether they were ones who were on the German side or not on the German side, but obliged, whether they liked it or not, to be there. And when they left to us, they just marched out, leaving the place in a really disgusting state. It took jolly nearly a week to scrub the place out and clean it, so that, you know. But anyway, that was done, and Forley and the barracks were we rechristened the St Patrick's Day barracks, St Patrick's Barracks, the St Patrick's Day celebration. On the 17th of March, had passed us by. We were on the Senio. It was postponed, and we celebrated St. Patrick's Day in Forley on the 29th with a typical Irish display. We had the Irish Brigade, we had the 56 Recce, we had another couple of Irish regiments, the North Irish Horse and the 1st Battalion of the Royal of the London Irish, were near enough to send us a small contingent and their pipes, if they, in the case of the London Irish. The result of that was that we were able to put on a really splendid parade in the square in Forley with 40 pipers and all the usual goings on. The Corps Commander General Keatley, who was himself an Irish Irish Dragoons or some. Anyway, he too was an Irishman. He was commanding the corps at that time. He came down and distributed the shamrock, some of which was shamrock and some of which was a local growth that looked not unlike shamrock. But anyway, it all went off very splendid do, and the locals were quite impressed, and made everybody feel better about things. But of course, it was only a part of the preparation for the next stage in the battle. There I got it. Yes, General Keatley, who was the Corps Commander, he was an Inniskillen Dragoon. So he was, not only was he our Corps Commander, he was the obvious man to distribute the shamrock on St. Patrick's Day. As I said, this was the Irish, it used to be called the Irish Mafia by jealous, other jealous units. Anyway, there we were preparing for the next stage of the battle. The next stage of the battle was, of course, to get across the River Senio, and the plan was made that the Canadians and the Indians, the Indian division and the Canadian division, would make the assault across the river, and the 78th Division and the 56th Division would then pass through and exploit that as far as they could get. Now, you might say, well, you've dwelt for so long on the strength of this position and the impossibility of doing anything about it. How was it going to succeed this time when it didn't succeed before? And the answer was by the sheer massing of every conceivable form of weaponry and so forth, and the actual assault was preceded by bombing, artillery bombardment, barrage, fighter cover. This was one of the better aspects of the later stages of the war in Italy, was that we had such overwhelming superiority in the air, and that was put to good tactical use on this occasion. The bombing and the artillery barrage lasted for five and a half hours, and was broken up into four phases. They bombed and bombed and shelled and so forth. And then it stopped, and of course then people think, oh dear, now the attack is going to come in, and they all are getting ready to repel the attack, instead of which there is the same thing again, bang, bang, another barrage, more bombs. This happened four times before they actually went in, and when they went in, they had some very nasty weapons which had been being devised in the long winter months. There were three sorts of tank derivatives. There was a tank with a great flail on the front of it, which would explode mines. That was a heavy Churchill tank. Then there were tanks and self-propelled guns, which were modified to carry troops, and there were two nasty tanks called Wasps and Crocodiles, which had flamethrowers in them. They reckoned that one way or another they would get across the Senio and get through, and they did. Of course, what it required was that an infantry assault should give a sufficient space to allow the sappers to get a bridge of some sort across so that the tanks could get over, and that was done. But that is how it was done, and it was a fairly brutal business. We were fortunately, as I say, we were in the exploiting lot rather than the breakthrough lot. It became our specialist skill from Casino onwards that we would do the break, that we would do the breakout, not the breakthrough or the break in. But there it was. The exploitation once the Senio had been crossed. There were still more rivers ahead. But the breakout was accomplished with a brigade group commanded by our Brigadier Scott, which was more like a division than a brigade. There was the Irish Brigade, there was the 2nd Armoured Brigade, the 4th Hussars, the 9th Lancers, two squadrons from the Royal Tank Regiment with flails and crocodiles, the 17th Field Regiment, which was our for a field a supporting field regiment all the way from North Africa onwards. The 11th, Honourable Artillery Company, the two troops of self-propelled guns, and an anti-tank battery. This was a brigade group, but as I say, it looked more like a division. Well, they were to get across the next river after the Senio, the San Terno, and then from then on to keep going to the next really serious obstacle, which was the Argenta Gap.
Okay.
No.
Sorry.